I got up this morning, put on my shoes, tied my shoes.
Hello everyone, this is Sean Ennis with the fourth MMA Torchcast. With me this week is Jerry Cataline. Jerry, how's things?
Things are good, man. Things are good. Getting psyched up for this weekend, and a beautiful Memorial Day it is.
Excellent, excellent. Yes, we are here with a preview of the UFC 71 card this Saturday night. Headlined, of course, by Chuck Liddell versus Rampage Jackson, part two. And what's your thoughts on the whole card before we get into the individual matches? What do you got?
Well, you know, we talked a little bit about this in our last podcast that I think everybody's kind of looking forward to the card in Arco Arena, you know, UFC 73 with all the title fights and Ortiz and whatnot. But this is an awfully good looking card. You know, as I was putting together my preview column for the Torch plug. It really struck me that there are a lot of real good fighters that are, you know, upper level, you know, on the card fighters that are really well matched against each other.
Yeah.
And out of the nine fights, I think there's probably only one that's an absolute rout, but this should be really some really good competitive fighting that it's tough to call the fights. You know, anybody that can go 8-1 or 7-2 this weekend in the prediction contest will certainly earn it.
Yeah, it's looking to be one of the strongest cards top to bottom that I've seen in quite some time, really. I think, you know, it's really got the potential to really deliver a lot of good fights. I mean, even on the preliminary cards or preliminary fights, I mean, I've only got, in my predictions, I've only got one going to decision right now.
Yeah, I think I had a couple more going to decision, but I thought, you know, I kind of put them in there only because I thought there were so many evenly matched fights.
Yeah.
That getting one, seeing one guy dominate the other and getting a takeout, a tap out or a knockout, I just couldn't really see it happening as often as I thought.
Yeah.
On the one hand, you know, I kind of hope it goes your way than mine because we'll see more fights on the pay per view.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, I would hope that there's a couple quick finishes so that we can see more of the fights, because I think I agree with you, top to bottom, this looks like a fantastic card.
Yeah, I think I might subliminally pick them to go, not go the distance, just so we can see more fights.
Because right now, I think if you go on the UFC site, I think they're only listing five for the broadcast.
Yeah, they usually only list those five.
Yeah.
So it'll be, I mean, the five look really good, but let's go ahead and start it off. We'll start off at the bottom with Wilson Gouveia versus Carmelo Moreiro. Tell me what you know about these guys.
Well, you know, I think, you know, both of these guys, you know, it's funny because, you know, when we look at the, you know, the 205 division, you know, I think everybody looks at Chuck Liddell and then the wasteland beneath him. But I think both of these guys have the potential to move up in the division, especially since everything seems to be, I think I used the word discombobulated in my column, and you know, with all the free agent signings that are coming in, I think both of these guys need a win to kind of bump up the ladder to stay in the mix. You know, Marrero's last fight, I believe he got tapped out by Gabriel Gonzaga, which then probably didn't, you know, seem like a great loss. Now you're looking at a guy that might become the next UFC heavyweight champion. So that all, you know, all of a sudden, that's kind of a credible loss.
Yeah.
And Gouveia, you know, is one of those guys that I'm surprised that he's kind of this low down on the card. I mean, he's really had a bunch of good fights over the last 18 months. You know, he had a real, real strong fight against Keith Jardine, who looks like a monster right now.
Yep.
And I think, you know, I think this, and again, this is one of these tight fights we're talking about. I think I picked Gouveia to submit Marrero. Because I just think he has a little more credibility right now, and he has a little more momentum. And I think, you know, Wilson's one of those guys that I think he's just got more of an advantage on the ground where I think this one will end up. And, you know, with a win, I see him moving up the ladder a little further. But I think, you know, over the next, you know, 9 to 12 months, I think the light heavyweight division is going to get a lot more competitive, especially if you have an upset in the main fight tonight.
Yeah, I agree. I've also got Gouveia in this fight, and honestly, I really see this one as a potential showcase for Gouveia. I mean, Marrero, as strong as he is, you know, he was taking Chet Congo down at will and all that kind of stuff when he was a heavyweight. But I mean, that's really all he has is just those takedowns. He's got that strong wrestling, but really, I mean, Gouveia's got that too. I think, you know, Marrero, he'll be able to hold his own for a little while, but Gouveia is just going to be too much. He's too fast for the strikes. His jiu-jitsu is too good. So even when it gets to the ground, I mean, I picked a similar fight when he fought Gonzaga. I had Gonzaga just destroying him, which ended up happening. I might have this one, excuse me, just a little bit closer with Gouveia getting the tap in the second round. But I just don't see Marrero having too much of anything for Gouveia besides the strength. And that was the difference in the Gonzaga fight, was that he was just so overpowered by Gonzaga that right. He just got dismantled. This is probably a little bit closer, you know, as far as size goes. So, but I definitely still see Gouveia getting the sub.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page here. And again, I mean, right now a loss to Gabriel Gonzaga is no shame.
That's okay.
You know, the fact that, but on the flip side of it, taking down Cheek Congo at will,
yeah,
doesn't seem like a big task.
yeah, not anymore.
Not anymore either. So, I'd go along with what you got there. I agree.
Okay. All right. Next on the card, we have Jeremy Stephens versus Dane Thomas.
Yep.
What do you got here?
Well, you know, and this is one of my frustrations with trying to sort MMA out sometimes is that. You know, in this fight, you got somebody who's a very known quantity in Dean Thomas, and you know, certainly got a ton of exposure. And yet, he's somebody that, it's hard for somebody who's looking for a lot of banging and a lot of action to watch Dean Thomas fight.
Yep.
And so you kind of, it's not that you want to pick against him per se, but then it makes you wonder who he's fighting. Jeremy
yep.
Stephens allegedly has ripped through a few Midwestern promotions, has a number of TKOs and KO victories. I think he's 8-1.
Yep.
So clearly, clearly he's got to have some striking ability. Now, again, when you look at these Midwestern promotions, or really the minor promotions, the minor leagues around the country, unless you're in that general area, or unless you are a hardcore MMA, almost, you know, press sort of person, it's hard to assess what kind of fighting this guy's been doing. And you know, Randy's column about Wayne Weems, you know, was an excellent column, kind of suggesting that, you know, records are what they are, but
mm-hmm.
what goes into that record? So I have to believe, and this is the naive part of me being the mixed martial arts noob, that somebody in the UFC brass has seen this kid fight and thinks he's ready for to fight on a pay-per-view card.
Yeah, the pay-per-view cards are certainly not... you know, they're not using the same criteria as they use to get guys on Tough, that's for sure.
Right. So I would think that this kid's got some potential. The problem
yeah.
I see with it is, again, this is kind of all speculation, is, you know, how is this kid going to react to being on the live show, even if he's the second fight on the card? I mean, you're still in the UFC, you're on a UFC pay-per-view card against a Tough veteran. A
yep.
win for this kid, I would think, would be huge to push him up the ladder. I think, though... I think Thomas has the ability to keep strikers at bay, though, and frustrate them. And
yeah.
I think Thomas is going to be smart enough, cagey enough to keep Stevens off of him, clinch when needed, get a takedown when needed, and kind of grind out a decision win. Having said that, this kid could be a powerhouse and knock out Thomas in 30 seconds for all I know about him, truthfully.
Yeah.
And that's the
yeah, it's one of those things where you've got... you know, he's almost coming in here the same as Frankie Edgar did and as Joe Lozon did.
Exactly.
You know, he's coming in to fight a guy that everybody knows, and nobody knows too much about him. Frankie Edgar was a guy who had a great reputation on the East Coast, but nobody had seen him.
Right.
I mean, Stevens is kind of the same thing. You know, he's got lots of knockouts on his record, but, you know, what does that mean? Doesn't mean, you know, necessarily anything.
Right. He's knocking out.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
But yeah, I've also got Thomas in this fight. Thomas just he's got a reach advantage, you know, over a lot of guys in the lightweight division, that just keeps people, like you said, keeps him at bay. And that's a lot of what makes him frustrating to watch for a lot of people, I think, is that he doesn't necessarily always go in for the kill unless he really sees an opening, but he'll peck away at it with that jab. And, you know, just he'll win the striking, but he won't really go out and just nail people, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, yeah, I'm definitely with you on this one. I've got him winning in the first round, but I think, you know, that's just one of my – that's just a pick to see if I can get an aberration, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think I had this one going to a decision, and
yeah.
Just because I see that that's where, you know, Thomas wins a fair amount of his fights, but it seems like that's the way this fight would go as I look at it. You know, the gambler in me wants to take Stevens.
Right.
And I think that, if I go into Randy's contest, I think I may throw a little at Stevens because I think he's getting the longest odds on the show.
Yeah.
In fact, listed on the site, he's second only to Houston Alexander, who's getting plus 450.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, the chicken pick, I wouldn't say it's a chicken pick, but it's kind of, you know, unless you know this guy, I think it's a hard one to guess.
Sure. Yeah, well, especially if it's real money. If it's real money, I'm staying away. But
our fantasy funds, I don't think it's a bad pick at all.
I agree. Because you know you never know. You never know what you're going to get with these guys.
Exactly.
Are you going to get Frankie Edgar, or are you going to get Jason Lee?
Right.
You know, who knows.
Right.
But yeah, I think we both see Thomas winning this one. I think a lot by just frustration until he, you know, finds an opening.
I agree.
We'll see what happens there. Next, we've got Alan Belcher versus Sean Salmon in an interesting fight.
I think it'll be a pretty this one's going to be kind of a tough one to call, too. If I'm not mistaken, Belcher's moving up to face Salmon.
Yes.
Due to an injury or some such. You know, I kind of have my rules for prognosticating in MMA, which state that generally, guys that move down in weight do better than guys that move up in weight, although there are exceptions. Dan Henderson comes to mind.
Yeah, Randy Couture.
And the cage favors a ground guy more so than a ring, which favors strikers.
Sure.
So looking at a couple of these rules of prognostication, you got to look at Sean Salmon here to win. Now, I think we all kind of recall Salmon and his highlight reel knockout at the feet of Rashad. And, you know... the buzz I got after that fight from kind of, you know, trolling boards and whatnot is Salmon is a better fighter than that. And in fact, I thought he gave Evans a pretty good fight before he got knocked out.
Yeah.
And I think that bodes poorly for Belcher, who got overwhelmed by Grove. I think that he's gonna. I don't see where he's gonna be able to take advantage of Salmon. I think Salmon is gonna be bigger, stronger, and be able to impose his will and kind of grind out a win here. And I think, I hate to say it, I think there's another one I had going to a decision. Something to that effect.
Yeah.
Yep. So, because I haven't seen where Salmon's got finishing skills necessarily.
Yeah, I definitely see your logic as far as picking Salmon by decision. You know, he is the stronger fighter. Belcher's coming up in weight, which is always a question mark, especially on relatively short notice. I mean, we had Eric Schaefer, who was scheduled to do this, 2.5 weeks ago or something?
About 3 weeks ago,
so
top of the month or so.
Yeah. So, you know, Belcher's coming in here on short notice, coming up 20 pounds in weight. So it's tough to pick. That having been said, I have Belcher. excuse me, to win the fight. And I kind of went with a long shot here. Belcher's actually, he's got a 4-inch height advantage. He's a better striker. You know, obviously Salmon is bigger. If he can get the shot, then Belcher's going to be in trouble. But, you know, you saw Belcher get in there and, like you said, get overwhelmed by Kendall Grove. I think he's going to be, a lot more wary of that this time, especially with a guy that's smaller and, obviously a better wrestler than he is. You know, there's the argument, too, also, you know, he's taking it on short notice. How much can he practice his sprawl or whatever? But I think he's got a pretty good takedown defense as it is. You know, he took Yushin Okami 3 rounds to a decision. You know, I end up losing it. But Salmon is nowhere near submission artist that Okami is.
I agree.
Ground and pound guy.
I agree with you. I agree with that, but I'm gonna throw in a quick counterpoint here.
Yeah.
I just think that I understand where you're coming from that, and I mean the line would bear out that this is a kind of a pick'em fight. I just think in the cage against a technically bigger guy, not necessarily taller.
Yeah.
I think that Salmon will probably eat a couple of jabs, but I think he'll get his shoots in. And you know, this is one of the cards. This is one of the fights that I think will be competitive, but
yeah,
a lot of grinding it out on the ground, sort of. That's
yeah,
I mean, that's the way I see it going.
Yeah, the way I see it, and this is, you know, obviously the logic makes sense the way you're talking about it, and that's the way I saw it when I first thought about it. But it's just a feeling. I don't know what it is, but you know, I can see Belcher, you know, losing the first round. But I think Salmon maybe gasses, you know, in the second round, and Belcher's able to pepper him a little bit, and just keep him frustrated with the takedowns. You know, wouldn't be the first time that a really good wrestler gasses, you know, halfway into the second, and then ends up losing a decision.
That's
what I've got it going as is Belcher by decision. I may be completely off, and you know, I admit that my pick makes no sense, but. We'll see what happens.
I think, you know, it just matters how you see the fight. I mean,
you know,
speaking for myself, I don't, like I said, I'm a fan that watches fights, and that's about all. I mean, you present a very logical scenario.
I don't make anything sound logical.
Well, I don't see Salmon tapping him out. I don't see where
yeah,
he's going to tap
either.
Him out. I think, like I say, he's got to get him down, land shots on the ground, mark him up a little bit, and that's where you got to win it. Being the bigger guy, there is always the risk that if Belcher pushes the pace, makes him move around the ring, that you know he's gonna run out of gas in the second half of the fight. So
I
don't see it going that way, but you know it's as logical as anything else. What I don't see is I'll go on record saying this. I don't see another right high kick coming to knock Salmon out.
No, that's for sure. That's for sure. I don't see that either.
Having said that,
we know how those high kicks are coming these days. But
I'll tell you, for a new fan that's kind of just watched some of the pay per view cards over the last 6 months or not, you would think that head kick knockouts and go-go platas are a dozen things.
Yeah,
you really would.
The last one I remember in the UFC, head kick knockout before Evans was with Tim Sylvia against Trey Teligman a little while ago.
Yeah.
And that was before he fought Arlovski.
Yeah. I mean that's going back a ways.
Yeah.
That's going back a ways. Let me think here. Yeah, I mean that's going back a little ways.
Yeah.
I mean I'm trying to think of other good examples.
You've got Liddell,
Sobral, yeah. But that was
exactly
that was after Teligman and Sylvia for sure. Yeah,
yeah.
It's just interesting. It was interesting when just to go off on a tangent here a little bit, when Diaz go-goed Gomi, so many fans kind of like myself would just kind of got into it in the last year or so. Thought, go-go Plata, no big deal. And old school fans were just losing their mind because, oh my God, go-go Plata. And, with two top level fighters, I mean, I understand that, if you get somebody experienced against somebody that's not very experienced, you can probably, submit somebody with a bizarre move that nobody ever sees.
Yeah, yeah.
Relatively simply. Against a top level fighter, the intricacies are much different. So,
great
time to be a fan.
You just never see, it's one of those ones you always hear about and you see it in demonstrations, but I'd always thought I would never see a go-go plata at a live event. And then you see two in 2 months with Aoki and Hansen and then Diaz and Gomi. It was just crazy, So, anyway, that's a good point, though. next up, I am so excited for this fight. I can't even tell you. I hope it makes the pay-per-view. James Irvin and Thiago Silva.
Yep. Yeah, this should be. James Irvin is such a tough guy to handicap. One fight he looks like a dominant player that's going to make a move in the 205s, and then in the next fight he doesn't. you know, it's tough to get behind him until he shows a little more consistency. On the other hand, you have Thiago Silva coming in, who by all accounts I've read is an absolute monster.
Yeah,
coming out of shoot box. And I think that one of the side effects that, of UFC or Zuffa, I should say, acquiring Pride is the advent of some of these shoot the boxer fighters coming in.
Yep.
And you know, Silva, I've seen a couple clips of his fights, and he just looks dominant.
Yeah, it's nasty stuff.
I mean, he just looks fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, Irvin's the sort of guy that can give him problems. You know, Irvin, when he fights well, is as well-rounded as anybody. And you know, he certainly has the skills to compete at the high level in this division. But this is going to be a test. I mean, I would think that, you know, obviously Silva's coming in as, you know, this is his big, you know, curtain-jerking effort in the UFC,
mm-hmm.
and here I am, and I am going to be the guy that, you know, I'm the next generation to come up the 205 ladder. And, you know, this is a big chance for Irvin. I think there's a lot of people that like to watch him fight, and I'm one of them. And
yeah, absolutely. You never see
him fight.
Yeah, you never see a boring James Irvin fight.
Exactly, and I am really hoping that he throws out a great effort here because, you know, he can win this fight.
Yeah.
And I didn't pick him to win this fight, but he
no.
can win this fight. And I am hoping that, you know, he comes out with a great effort and gives Silva all he can handle. I am really hoping that it's not one of these lackluster efforts that we've seen a couple times in the past.
Yeah, I think a lot of where Irvin's problem comes in is when the fight goes to the ground. You know, if you watch that fight he had with Stephen Bonner, once it hit the floor, he was done. You know, this fight, I will go out on a limb here and say, it is not going anywhere near the ground until somebody is compelled to go to the ground by a fist or a foot. I just don't see it happening at all. It's going to be – I don't see it getting out of the first round, honestly, with the way these guys throw.
No.
You know, I could be wrong with that, but I just I can't imagine, you know, with the skill that both of these guys have on the feet – I think there's a first round knockout here. I'm going with Silva simply because, just from what I've seen of him, his striking is ridiculous. And for those that don't know, you've got the Shooter Box Academy out of Brazil is where Thiago Silva is coming out of. That same place that produced Vanderlei Silva, Mauricio Hua, I believe. Mario Hua is Mauricio's brother, Ninja and Shogun. Both of those guys came out of Shooter Box. Just a countless number of guys coming out of Shooter Box and just devastating strikers.
Yep. I had this one getting into the second with Silva winning by technical knockout, only because I am sure that, you know, both fighters understand each other's strengths, and I suspect we might see a little bit of what I call the two-minute dance to start this fight.
Yeah, that is the question, is how long that little dance will take.
Yep. And I think that's the only reason why this gets into the second round. But I agree with you. This should be a really exciting fight. I mean, there is part of me that's rooting for Irvin to win this fight, even though I picked against him.
He's a likable guy.
He's a, you know, he comes off well. He is an exciting fighter when he brings his game. You know, the loss to Lodun Sincade, I could not possibly understand.
No.
Still don't get it.
No.
I'd like to see him move up the ranks because I think, you know, as the UFC is gaining popularity and starting to get more media attention, especially on, you know, ESPN and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
I really think they need a standard bearer out there that is good in the public forum. Not to say Chuck Liddell is not, but
yeah. You
caught Chuck on his interview with Jim Rome or...
I didn't happen to see that. I wanted to, but I missed it.
There was a little blurb on ESPN News, and they chatted with him a little bit. Chuck does not come off as a guy that looks real media polished.
Yeah, he's a very, you know, he's a personable guy, but more keeps to himself. I don't know if he likes all the attention.
Right. I mean, he's a guy that you could probably you probably get a better. I don't want to be too critical here. It'd probably be a better interview if you were, you know, sitting at the bar having a beer with Chuck.
Yeah,
and you probably get more
absolutely.
Of a. I don't want to say energetic. Yeah, energetic response. You know, and I would imagine it's difficult to be one of the flag-bearing celebrities in an up-and-coming sport.
Yeah.
And you'd ask the same questions over and over and over and over again. But,
yep.
You know, I think that's why the UFC specifically needs to see one of their young, and I don't want to say controversial, but more media-friendly fighters attain notoriety and or a championship.
Yeah, well, you know, it wouldn't be the worst thing for the UFC if Rampage took this fight on Saturday.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. And again, if you look at the other standard bearers, you got Randy Couture, who clearly is a class act.
Oh yeah.
You know, but Randy at 43 is outside the demographic that the UFC is targeting anyway.
Yeah.
And you know there's your class act champion. It does not say Chuck is not.
Right.
This is to say that you've got that spot filled. Now you need somebody who is, you know. James Irvin.
Bad guy.
But Jackson, yeah, the not controversial, but energetic.
Yeah. You need a badass out there.
The guy that you can put on the cover of ESPN, the magazine, and
yeah,
has some, I don't know, street credibility.
Sure.
You know, it's kind of that pop feel to it. You
sure.
Know, Tito Ortiz had it for a while. I'm not, you know, Tito I don't think is ever going to get back to the top of the mountain, at least while Chuck is in that division. And even so, like I say, you got these young guys coming up. Tito's not old, but you know he's 31, I think, 31
yep.
or 32. And you know, until Chuck drops the crown,
yeah,
I mean, I think he's got a long road to get there. And so, I think again, you know, I think they need a little pizzazz.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they may have it after Saturday night.
We'll get there in a few minutes.
Yeah,
I didn't mean to get off on a tangent. I just kind of came to my mind.
Yeah. So you've got Silva in the second round by TKO, right?
I do. Like I say, I think the 2-minute dance will push this into the second round, but maybe.
Yeah. Not. Yeah. It's pretty much a toss up. I mean, you know, we pick rounds, but who friggin' knows what round it's going to end in. But I've got Silva by knockout in the first. And that's not saying anything negative about Irvin, because he can throw, man. And he can take some shots too. Just look at the last fight with Hector Ramirez.
Yep.
I mean, that was a barn burner in itself.
Yep. Yep.
So I'm really excited to see this one. Moving on to the main card, first fight is Chris Lieben and Caleb Starnes. What do you think about this one?
This should be a pretty good fight as well. I think, you know, both these guys carry the name value that'll keep people hooked into the card and, you know, kind of lead them into the rest of the card. Chris Lieben is one of those guys. I didn't realize this is Chris Lieben's 10th fight in the UFC.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of catches you by surprise that that he's one of the original, you know, tough fighters that is still around, I would say. But
I believe Lieben was on every UFC fight night card for the first, I want to say, 6 or 7, something
yeah,
ridiculous.
Yeah, he had an incredible run. He had, still, I mean, I shouldn't say has an incredible run. But he's lost 2 out of his last 3.
Right.
So, I mean, when you look at on the face of it, you know, he's got one loss to Anderson Silva, you know,
yep.
which, no shame.
Acceptable.
There. Acceptable.
Sure.
And he lost to Jason McDonald, in what I thought was a pretty competitive fight, and
yep.
he got caught with a submission. Lieben's calling card will always be his aggression, and that, you know, will keep him fighting. This, I think, is a good fight for him against Caleb Starnes.
Yep.
I think this plays into Chris's strengths well. Because I think Chris will push the pace on Starnes, and I think ultimately he'll get Starnes to collapse. Now, the question is, I think, is will Starnes be able to catch Chris in a submission, or will he be able to keep Chris away from using his reach? And that's kind of a tough call. I think Lieben understands that you can't lose too many in a row and still stay in the UFC.
Yeah.
So he's looking at it with a loss here. He's looking at 3 out of his last 4, and red hair, no. Aggressive style, or no. The competition for spots on the UFC roster, I suspect, is getting greater and greater and greater with each passing month.
Yeah.
So I think for Lieben, he needs a win here. Starnes also, you know, can't hurt for a win. I think his last loss was to Yushin Okami, who also
yeah.
looks like a contender too. But someone's got to win and someone's got to lose, and I think the UFC will put more of their chips behind Lieben than Starnes. And I think this is Lieben's fight. I think I have Lieben the TKO in the third round or some such. And I think it may even, you know, in retrospect, I think he might take him out earlier than that, just because I think once he gets the advantage and presses it, I think Stearns will kind of throw his hands up and move on.
Yeah, you and I have the same pick on this one. Stearns, you know, he's one of those guys that came into the Ultimate Fighter, and right away we heard about how much you know, potential he had and how great he was and all that kind of stuff. But we haven't really seen it.
No.
You know, we saw him fight Danny Abadi, I believe on the finale, if I'm not mistaken,
yep.
Or maybe it was a little bit later on. But, you know, Danny Abadi's a lightweight, you know, and he fought him at 185.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, it's not all that impressive. And then he goes in there and just gets smoked by Yushin Okami. You know, Stearns does have a knockout victory over Jason McDonald, who submitted Lieben. But at the same time, that's, I believe, you know, 2.5 years ago,
that was November of 2005, so...
Yeah, November of 2005.
Stearns only fought twice since then.
Yeah, that was the other point.
In 2007, he's been very inactive.
Yeah.
So you have to wonder if the desire is there.
Whereas Lieben is all over the place. He's always fighting.
Right.
Always fighting. And, you know, I just see Lieben pushing the pace too much for Stearns. You know, another thing about him is he reminds me of a pre-155 Joe Stevenson in that... A real question mark is his heart.
Right.
You know, how much does he want it? I mean,
right.
His skills are there, but, you know, he doesn't really seem all that into it when he's in the ring, you know what I mean?
Yeah. See, that's the weird part about this fight. I mean, Stearns, who has been unseen since October of 2006, and granted, you know, just TKO, so there's a suspension and whatnot, but even then, wasn't fighting real regularly before that anyway.
Yeah.
Here's a chance. I mean, this is a chance to get back in the mix.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this is a chance to get back in the mix against a named fighter. Because this is, I mean, when people turn on their sets to, you know, watch the card, this is the first fight you're going to see. And this is a chance for Stearns to make a name for himself. I mean, a lot of McDonald's hype came because he took out Chris Lieben,
yeah.
Among others. But that was part of the McDonald push.
Yeah.
Stearns is given the same opportunity here. I mean, if he beats Lieben, you got to think that there are more fights in store for him. And... at the same time, probably takes Lieben right out of the mix in the UFC in the first place.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is a huge opportunity. And
yeah, it's a huge fight for both guys, I agree.
Yeah. I think the UFC's probably pulling for Lieben to get the win here because, you know, obviously he's a busy fighter. He's a fighter people want to see. He's a marketable name.
Yep.
I think they'd like to see him start to string some wins together to kind of compete. But at the same time,
I agree.
I mean, I picked Lieben to win this fight, but, you know, I don't train with Caleb. You know, I don't have an insight into his camp. I would imagine that people are in his ear saying, look, you got to win this fight.
Yeah.
Because you know, a loss to Okami and a loss to Lieben, and they'll start moving on.
Yeah. I mean, you, for us, you got to go by what you've seen, and I just haven't seen a whole lot out of Stearns yet.
No, I haven't either. I haven't either. I just, I agree with you on this one. I think this is Lieben's fight to lose.
I agree.
This is his fight to lose. If Lieben comes in, training like we're supposed to train, attacks, pushes the pace, I think he wins this fight. I think he wins this, not easily, but I think he wins this fight handily.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I also did have my knockout in the third, and I think, you know, Stearns is good enough to survive that long. You know, but again, whether he'll want to, who knows?
Right.
You know, I don't know. So he's kind of an enigma right now. It's definitely an intriguing fight to me. A guy who has a lot of tools, but who knows if he's really got the motivation. I don't know.
Well, that's what you have to wonder. I mean,
yeah.
I guess, and again, you know, it's hard to look at this from the perspective of a spectator, but I think we've talked about this a little bit when we talked about, you know, how do you get on the Ultimate Fighter if you don't have any fights and whatnot. But I would think that fighters that train would come up with nearly anything to get that sort of experience.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Here's Caleb Stearns. He's in the middle of it already.
Yep.
You're there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would think that you would come in with a plan to win this fight. He's got the tools to win this fight.
Yep.
I mean, it's not that he can't do it. It's just
yeah.
You got to. It comes. This kind of comes down to heart. I mean, to beat Chris Lieben, you got to be willing to get in there, take a shot, and smack him back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what Silva did. That's what McDonald did. I mean, McDonald.
Yep.
Was not, you know, he wasn't unbruised when he won that fight.
No, it definitely wasn't a one-sided affair. I mean, Lieben got his shots
right.
In there.
I mean, so, you know, he got, McDonald got popped a couple times, so.
Yeah, it was a good fight.
You gotta, if you're going to beat Chris Lieben, you gotta answer, and you gotta wonder if Stearns has that answer.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Okay. Moving on, we have got Houston Alexander versus Keith Jardine. What do you got here?
Well, I think just about everybody but Houston's mom and friends have Keith Jardine winning this one handily.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where they found this dude. and, you know, I got, you know, I got to give him credit for getting in there against Jardine, because my understanding is he was kind of a late find too.
Yeah. Yeah. What had happened was they wanted Jardine to fight on this card, but couldn't find anybody to fight him.
Find anyone to fight him. So, I mean, what's that say about Keith Jardine?
Yeah.
Jardine has all the momentum in the world. I mean, that win against Griffin is still resonating today and through this card.
Yep. Yep.
And all of a sudden, you know, Jardine is strongly up the ladder, and you know, you got to have him in the mix when you talk about title contenders.
Yeah, that's for
I don't
sure.
think this. I don't think it's be much of a fight at all. I just don't see where. I don't see how Alexander wins this fight.
Yeah.
You know, unless somebody goes all Tonya Harding on, you know, on Jardine before the fight.
Looking, yeah, it's. Do a little editing on this, but anyway, it's almost a lose-lose situation for Jardine. Unless he gets the highlight reel knockout, because, you know, he's fighting an unknown guy coming off a huge win. Everybody wants to see him fight. Nobody wants to fight him. And, you know, he can't go in there and lose to Houston Alexander. He can't even, it's against his best interest to even go in there and have a close fight with Houston Alexander.
Oh, exactly.
You know, yeah. He's got to go in there, fire off some nasty leg kicks, get him hobbled, and knock him out. That's what he's got to do. Because that's what you expect when you see Jardine. Jardine's got to go in there and beat Jardine and just mop up the floor with this guy.
Right. I think it's right there for him to do. I think that Jardine's got to know he's got the momentum. He's got to know he's got the push, and he's got to know that he's got to go in there and absolutely dominate this guy. And yeah. I think he will. You know, again, there's a reason why nobody wants to fight him.
Yeah.
There's a reason why nobody wants to fight him. I would be, and again, you know, it comes down to, you know, it's one of those. This is either going to be, I think, you're going to see Jardine, you know, get the highlight reel knockout or a dominating win, or you're going to have kind of a Matt Serra style upset.
Right.
I think
right.
it's greater than a Matt Serra style upset, quite honestly.
Because
yeah. I have a hard time seeing where this guy wins. I just can't see a scenario.
Yeah.
You know, it is.
So, yeah, they did. I believe they found him through Monty Cox, who was. An agent for a lot of the big names, you know, your Matt Hughes, your Rich Franklin, that kind of guy. And Alexander's a guy who, you know, the UFC went to Cox and said, do you have anybody who will fight Jardine? And he said, how about Alexander? You know, he's a real tough guy. But that's really the only endorsement that we've got is from his, you know, from his agent, from his promoter. So, you know, of course it's going to be a ringing one. And Alexander's a big dude, but, you know, I'm with you. I don't see how you come in on your debut on the main card and take out Keith Jardine.
I give him credit for coming in for it. I really do.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And one thing I didn't mention, speaking of credit, if we go back a few fights to Alan Belcher, you know he's got to have gotten some brownie points for moving up in a weight class to take on Salmon.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, you've got to believe that Dana White was just smiling from ear to ear when he heard this. So
right.
Belcher's going to be around for a little while. You might as well get used to seeing him.
Yeah, and he's an entertaining fighter. I mean,
yeah,
the fight against Grove, he put up a fight. He just was, you know, he was overmatched. I mean,
yeah, he was overmatched. He wasn't ready for Grove.
Yeah, Kendall Grove's going to do that to a lot of fighters.
Yeah.
But
he gave Okami all he could handle for three rounds, though.
Yep, and that's true. And, again, I think it's been well demonstrated that these are the sort of fighters that Dana White likes.
Yep.
You're going to go in there and you're going to fight.
Yep, regardless of circumstances. And I'll tell you what, man, coming up 20 pounds in weight is no small feat.
No, it isn't. No,
especially in just like 2-3 weeks. My gosh.
No.
So
I think we both agree that the opportunity is not only from the fight, but I mean he's got a significant chance to win this fight. I mean, we're not talking about a world beater here. I mean, Sean Salmon is a good fighter fighting in his comfortable weight class, but
he's
not unbeatable.
Yeah, that's for sure. But, okay, so anyway, that was just a side note that I wanted to get in there. Next, now, we've got our top three fights here. Next on the list is Josh Berkman versus Carl Parisian. This is going to be some kind of fight, but go ahead with your analysis.
I think we used the word intriguing for this card, and this is where we get right into the meat of the matter. I mean, the six fights we've previewed up until now, I think we agree most of them should be good fights, and there's storylines and backstories there of what each fighter needs, and it makes it good, you know, great TV. This has got fight of the night sort of potential to it.
Absolutely.
You know, both of these guys have a greater goal in mind. Berkman, you know, had all the right momentum, you know, about a year ago. And all of a sudden, you know, he's kind of fallen into the background. And granted, with everything that's gone on at the top of this division, it's difficult not to, you know, be blown away in the wing stuff. Carl Parisian also is another guy that, you know, I think we talked about Carl on our last podcast. Mm-hmm. Carl was a guy that was going to fight for the championship until he got sidelined. And ever since then, he's been kind of climbing back uphill.
Yep.
And, you know, this is kind of, I think, a guy that's you know, a guy in Carl that's, you know, has all the tools, you know, all the tools to be the champion still. And he's just kind of treading water, waiting to get his chance back into the title picture. And then you had Josh Berkman, who also was a guy that was, you know, aiming for the top of the charts, certainly has an aggressive style, or did.
Yeah.
And now he's looking to make his name and get back to the top of the card as well. This should be a fantastic fight. This is the one I'm really anxious to see. The title fight aside, I think Parisian is an active enough fighter that I think he'll keep Berkman at range a little bit, and I think that Parisian will get some advantages to get in a dominant position and do enough to win this fight. I have a hard time seeing this one end without a decision. I just think both guys are top level enough to defend, and I think both of them are tough enough that they'll take a few shots, but I don't think they'll get in that lopsided a position.
I
have Parisian winning here.
Yep.
But I think this should be a great fight. I think that if Parisian can dictate the pace of this fight, he wins. He'll win for sure. If Berkman comes out with aggression and, you know, a mission, and can kind of get to Parisian, I think certainly this could go the other way. This should be a fantastic fight.
Yeah, I agree. I also have Carl winning this one. I put it down. I could see it going to decision. I put it down as a third round submission for Parisian, just to see if I could get a few extra points in the pick'em contest. But I definitely can see this one going to decision for sure. But you know, you're right. I mean, Parisian has got so many tools. He's never in a boring fight. You know, the last time we saw him was against Drew Fickett, and that was a real good fight.
Yep.
You know, he went in there against Diego Sanchez and put on a fight of the year. But just a guy that can hurt you in so many ways.
Yep.
And does. You know, he gets in there and he throws everybody that he fights, those judo throws. You know, he drops you on your head. And the funny thing to me is I was watching the countdown to UFC 71, which was a great show, by the way.
Okay.
A really good hype machine show, really good. But he was talking about how everybody says that they're going to get in there with him and he's not going to be able to throw him, and he goes and he throws everybody. And I remember specifically Diego Sanchez saying, that judo crap won't work on me. And he got dropped on his head a couple of times.
Yeah.
And it was great. But now you've got a guy like Josh Berkman who, you know, was on a fantastic roll when he came off the show. You know, destroyed Sammy Morgan with a slam, choked out Drew Fickett within a minute, and then ran into the brick wall that is John Fitch, followed by a couple of decision wins. So, you know, Berkman's a guy that with a win over Parisian, I mean, that would do wonders for him.
Yep. Oh, that would get him right back in the mix. And it's funny, you just dropped two words there. What did John Fitch do to get no push?
I don't know, man.
That is one of the great mysteries of MMA to me.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just bad luck for him, you know? I mean, it looks like he's going to be on the main card of this Ultimate Fight Night 10 or UFC Fight Night 10, But he's fighting you know, the immortal Rowan Carneiro, who just took out Rich Clenty. You know,
right.
Meanwhile, he fights Luigi Fioravanti in a really good fight, and it's on the undercard.
Right.
But, you know.
Well, I mean, not to get too far off that, Fitch hasn't lost since he lost to Wilson Gouveia back in December of 2002.
Yeah.
He's 5-0 in the UFC.
Yeah.
I mean...
And none of these guys are pushovers.
No.
He's got Brock Larson, Josh Berkman, and Thiago Alves.
Yeah. Sean Carter.
Yeah.
He had Shoney, submitted Shoney to strikes. I mean, why isn't this guy in the mix?
Yeah, I don't know. I think he is there, but they just want to get him on TV a few more times. I mean, welterweight, like you said, it's a tough division to break out in, man.
Yeah, it's a bizarre division.
But
I mean, it speaks to me that to me, and nothing against Berkman, I would have thought you'd have Fitch in there against Parisian.
Oh gosh,
ranking-wise, that's 5-6, 4-5 sort of fight.
Yeah,
you're
absolutely right.
Winner gets a title shot soon, sort of mess.
Yeah,
you get the Sarah St. Pierre Hughes cost check.
Yeah, it'd be like
cost check question mark picture.
Yeah.
Health. So
it would basically be like a winner gets a shot at a title shot.
Yeah, eventually.
For this fight.
You know, Berkman, to me, you know, the way of order dictates that Parisian wins this fight. The way things go in the 170-pound division, Berkman wins it somehow, you know, like a second-round knockout.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's just kind of the way that the welterweight division has worked lately. I still think he's going to win. But Berkman win would just toss this into more
disarray.
And I mean, nothing against Berkman. I think in the MMA Torch rankings, Berkman's number 9.
Yep.
In the 170-pound division, so certainly, certainly a strong fighter, and certainly deserves to be in the mix.
Yeah. So we've both got Carl Parisian winning this fight. I think most everybody's got Carl Parisian winning this fight. And
yep.
You know, the word going around is that, you know, everybody likes Berkman. Everybody thinks Berkman's a good fighter, but Parisian's just a little bit better.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
I really this is going to be a real good fight. I'm excited for it.
Yeah. The card looks fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. Moving on, we got another really intriguing fight. I think Terry Martin and Ivan Salivary.
Yeah. This should be a great one too. You know, Martin's knockout of George Rivera back in February still resonates in my brain. To me, there's nothing more dangerous than a guy who is known to be a heavy striker moving down in weight.
Yeah.
And I think that is the definition of puncher's chance.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Terry Martin has a puncher's chance with nearly anybody he's in there with, and he came down a long way to get in this division. So,
yep.
Salivary, I've seen a couple of his fights, and I think at the top of his game, I think he turns Terry Martin into a square knot. But I think Terry Martin's on a roll. I think Terry Martin has momentum. I think he's going to get to Salivary. I think that he's smart enough that he doesn't want to go to the ground with him.
Yep.
And I think he's strong enough that I think he can overpower Salivary, and if it does get to the ground, he's going to strike him out.
Yep.
Having said that, he's got to be kind of careful. Salivary is one of those veteran guys that can make you look very foolish if you screw up.
Yeah, very true.
And I can't argue against somebody picking Salivary too strongly, because certainly, he's certainly got all the tools to win this fight handily. But I just like Martin's momentum. I like his karma, you might say. And plus,
yeah, I agree.
Hands, and I just see him. I see a few times in the first round. I see Salivary being smart enough to get into the second, but I see Martin taking him out in the second with strikes.
Yeah. I've got that pick as well. The middleweight division right now is just wide open. I think the winner of this fight really starts getting the big push. I mean, Martin has just got all the tools. He's a mauler on the ground. You know, if you remember the fight with James Irvin before that highlight reel flying knee, he dominated Irvin on the ground for that whole 5 minutes.
Right.
Before he came out and got knocked out, but And just the power. I mean, Martin's got a huge power advantage over Salivary, I think, here. You know, that's not to say that it's all that important with the way Salivary fights, but, you know, it's like you say, when they get down to the ground, I think Martin can just toss them around, even on the ground. And Salivary's only shot would be really just to catch an arm somewhere or you know, a dangling limb. But I just don't see it happening. I think Martin gets in there and pounds him out, maybe even knocks him out on the feet before it gets down to the ground.
Yeah, I think we're on the same side. Salivary also has not been real active. You know, he's got barely two fights since, a fight in July of 06 and a fight in August of 05 where he lost to Marquardt. I think this is, the more I look at this, I think the more this is a tough fight for him to win.
Yeah, I agree.
I think this is Martin's chance to, you know, get some ground picked up in that division.
I do hope we see a lot more of Salivary. I was real disappointed when he left after the fight with Marquardt. So I hope they keep him around for a while, even though I don't really think he has much of a shot in this one. I think he could be, you know, a top 5-6 guy in the middleweight division if they give him enough of a shot.
Yeah, people said that about Randy Couture, though, when he at 43. You know, that heavyweight division and the move up to heavyweight, and what are you thinking? And, you know, Salivary is another one of those guys that, you know, is a just a wily sort of veteran that comes in with a game plan. And if he can put out, if he can put out his best effort, I think he wins this fight. I just think that Martin's coming in and he's going to get him.
Yep, I agree. Okay, so that wraps up 8 fights. Let's move into the big one.
Yep.
We've got Chuck Liddell and Rampage Jackson Part 2. Now I know who you've got here, but give me your pick and give me your analysis.
Well, it is hard to pick against Chuck Liddell. It really is hard to pick against Chuck Liddell. He's been the dominant player in the 205 division. He's won 7 in a row. It is tough to pick against him, but I am picking against him. To probably my everlasting shame. And my rationale was a couple of things. I don't think you can put too much stock against somebody that's already beaten you once. Now, Chuck has avenged 2 of those losses already. I think this is a different sort of fight for him going against Rampage. I think for somebody like Rampage to come back to this country to fight primarily, I think he's not blind to all the press time that Chuck is getting. I think that certainly that is motivation for him. I think he has a style that gives Chuck a hard time. I think he's not afraid to get in, close the distance on Chuck, and bang with Chuck.
Yep.
And I think that Jackson can threaten enough takedowns to keep Chuck back on edge, where Jackson can kind of work some stand up and keep shooting for a takedown. Jackson has been in there with some tough guys, and I don't think he's going to quail under the lights. I think he got his butterfly fight out of him already against Eastman. And just, I think we touched on the unbeatable tag on our last podcast, too. Chuck is, there's Chuck and there's Fedor that are, you know, by the mass is considered to be the untouchables.
Yep.
And I think that the way MMA has gone in the last 6 to 8 months, that the gap is closing. I know there aren't many people picking Jackson, but I'm going to go with Jackson. I think that he'll get to Chuck enough that I think he'll end up with a kind of a ground and pound win with strikes in the fourth round. I think that Jackson realizes that his time is right now. I mean, he came over here to fight Liddell. I think if he loses to Liddell, especially if Ruah's coming over, especially with the young 205ers coming up, that for him to get back to the top of the mountain for another title shot will be a long time, and it'll also be against somebody that's, if Chuck's, hangs it up, like I say, for Jackson to lose this fight and get back to a title shot might be 2 or 3 years away. By then, you're looking at Chuck at 40.
Yep.
May not be Chuck Liddell. Maybe somebody younger, bigger, stronger, because things get, things progress. I think Jackson knows it's all on the line for him right here. I think he can see the prize, and I think he's got the style that can beat Chuck. I think to beat Chuck, you got to be willing to get in there. You got to be willing to close the distance on Chuck, land a jab, land shots, and try to shoot on him a few times and make him use that sprawl, make him back up, and make him think about being taken down. Because the last few fights he's had, the last couple fights anyway, it's been Chuck teeing off on the guy in front of him and the other guy covering up. And that's not that's a good way to get knocked out.
Yeah, no kidding.
Not a good way to win the fight. And Jackson's been in there with some bombers. I just think the karma's on his side right here. I think this is his time, and I think you're going to see a prime Quentin Jackson go in there. Some of the critical aspects of Jackson, I think, is that his game hasn't changed much, and Chuck has shored up some holes in his game, which is true.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that Jackson can utilize that game plan to get inside Chuck and make it happen.
Yeah, I can definitely see that analysis. I'll give you something else, though, that'll make you a little more confident in your pick, and that's that Randy Couture is also picking Quentin to win the fight.
Yeah, I read that.
Yeah, Couture knows his stuff.
Yeah.
But, and a few more things. Every time I think about this fight, I go back and forth, and I'll give you a few things that I was thinking about with Jackson. In Jackson's favor. If you think about Chuck Liddell, he's not fought great strikers or real good strikers. You know, he's got 9 knockouts in a row, but I'll list them off, and you tell me who is as good a striker as Rampage. Pete Ortiz, Babalu, Randy Couture, Jeremy Horn, Vernon White, Alistair Overeem. Anybody stand out?
Not really. I mean, Overeem's kind of got more of that Muay Thai game.
I
watched that fight, and Overeem had Liddell backing up a few times.
Yeah.
And really, when you talk about Alistair Overeem, you're talking about a guy that has really never lived up to his potential entirely and has a history of
gassing. I agree completely.
He gassed in that fight. He had Liddell backing up.
Yeah.
He had Liddell against the ropes. He was working the Muay Thai, and he had Chuck backing up, and you could see him gas a little bit. He leaned into to clinch. Chuck nailed him.
And got caught. Yeah.
Caught, and then Chuck just finished him off with a barrage of punches.
Yep.
I had Overeem in that fight until he got knocked out.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
No,
that's the thing.
And having said that, Quentin Jackson and Alistair Overeem are two different sorts of strikers. Overeem is, all those names you listed off, you're right. There's not a guy out there that strikes like Jackson can.
Yeah.
Or willing to.
Yeah. That's why, I keep going back and forth because, he's got all these knockouts, and it's mostly come by, a lot of counterpunching. But also, I mean, gosh, it's like you said, Rampage's game plan just matches up so well with Chuck's, and he's not going to sit there, Chuck's not going to sit back and take punches waiting for his opening against Rampage. He's not going to be using his counterpunch game plan like he did against these other guys. He's going to have to get in there and attack. Rampage is going to get in close with him. I don't think Jackson's going to look to take him down, really. I don't think he has to.
I think he will try to. I think he will try to because I think it will open up more space for him. Chuck is a shark. When Chuck has you backpedaling, or Chuck
that's for sure.
Comfortable, when Chuck gets in the pocket and he's comfortable and he finds his range and has his angles, Chuck is a... that's where he is the strongest.
Yeah,
I think
go ahead.
Even threatening to take the shoot for a takedown, I think makes Chuck uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Not that he can't defend the takedown, but he can't get into that zone where he wants to be, where he's going to land most effectively.
Right. Right. I think the big question in this fight is who catches whom first and how hard.
Right.
Because it's going to be a slugfest. We're not going to be seeing a lot of submission grappling here.
No.
It's just going to be, who gets punched in the face and gets rocked
And how do they react? Because I don't think either of these guys...
Exactly.
I don't think either of these guys are going to be one-punch knockout victims.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Both these guys can take a shot. It's how do they react to getting hit?
That's the thing. I'll tell you what. If one of these guys gets tagged and drops his guard, then he's done. Because, it's just like you said, Liddell's a shark. If he hits you once and you're staggered and you start moving back and your hands drop a little bit, you're finished.
Yep.
You might as well just forget about it.
Oh,
but it's the same thing with Rampage. If you give Rampage an opening, like if he hits you hard, you drop your guard a little bit or, soften up, and he sees an opening for a knee, forget about it.
Right.
When's
the last time anybody hit Chuck?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's my
when's
point.
The last time Chuck got hit? I mean, got hit. I mean... it's been a few fights. I mean, yeah. you'd probably have to go back to the Overeem fight to where he was hit.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
yeah.
You know, I think that's going to be a test. I think there are the two big questions. The first one is what you said, certainly. The second is, can Jackson hit him?
Yeah.
Can he get inside and hit him?
Yeah, it's not a coincidence they haven't been hit.
Yeah, I'm saying he can. I'm saying he can get inside and get a piece of Chuck, and therefore will follow up. Because I think Quinton's got all the momentum in the world to win this fight.
Yeah.
And even
I agree with you on some level. And you know, I've gone back and forth. Like I said, I picked Jackson, I picked LaBelle. I've got to go with Chuck. I've got to. I can't bring myself to pick against LaBelle.
Chicken.
I promised myself after I picked Couture in his third fight with LaBelle that I would never pick against LaBelle again. And you know, unless I can come up with a really compelling argument to pick against him, and you know, as compelling as this one is, I've got to go with LaBelle. I really think, you know, I think Rampage will get to him a little bit, but not enough to get him to drop his guard enough to where he can really get in there and do a lot of damage. I think Chuck is just going to catch him first and be able to finish him off. But I see it going as late as you did. I have LaBelle by knockout in the fourth round. So I really hope we're in for a long fight and a good fight that gets into the championship rounds.
Oh, I think it'll be a great fight. I don't think there's any question about that. One other thing I'd toss in here is, I know you'd never hear this, I don't think you'd ever catch wind of it, but I would be surprised if there aren't a few people in the UFC top levels that are rooting for Jackson to win.
Oh, I guarantee there are.
You know,
guaranteed.
That are rooting for him to win, to push the media presence. I mean, if you watch, you know, The Ultimate Fighter, they are looking for guys to represent with bling.
Yep.
And, you know, Quinton Jackson falls right into that mold. And, you know,
yeah, absolutely.
It's not a shot at Chuck Liddell, who is,
no,
I think, done as good as he can with what he has to be the media presence for the UFC. But they are, I would be shocked if nobody was picking or rooting for Jackson to win.
Yeah, I mean, if someone is going to knock the king off his throne, it's got to be somebody that can carry the torch well.
Right.
And you know, a guy that can really represent himself well to the media, and I think Rampage could do a really good job with that.
I think so too. I just, you know, it is hard to pick. I felt your pain, because the more I looked at this fight, I would always get down to the end of the analysis and say, but how can you pick against Chuck?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's going to lose sometime.
Yeah.
All right.
You're right.
Like me. Chuck Liddell is not going to, you know, get 2 or 3 years down the road and go, well, you know, I'm done.
Yeah, you're right.
With the belt, and he's going to lose to somebody. He's going to lose sometime. I think most of us agreed that, you know, when Chuck's game starts to deteriorate a little bit, it's going to go fast.
Yep.
I think this is the fight that I think this is the one. I just think it is. I think that, like I said, I think Chuck hasn't been hit in a long time.
Yep.
He has been rocked probably since Overeem, and
yep.
I think it'll be the fight will hinge on, I think, if and when Chuck gets hit, how does he react?
Yeah, I agree. You know, that's definitely a part of it. You know, it's with both guys.
Yep.
You know, like we were talking about.
Yeah, I understand your pain, because in chatting with other people about this fight, you know, we'd have the same arguments, and it would always end on, you know, how can you pick against Chuck Liddell? It is hard. It is hard to pick against Chuck Liddell. And the worst part is, you know, when Chuck wins, oh, well, you look like an idiot. But
yeah, exactly.
it was the same thing. How could you pick against Chuck Liddell? But I think, you know, it's not, you have to, you know, sometimes, like when he fought Tito Ortiz, to pick Tito, I think you really had to talk yourself into picking Tito.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
I had to talk myself into picking Liddell for this. I think that says a lot.
Yep. And I think this one, I don't have to talk myself into picking Jackson. Jackson can win this fight. He can win this fight. You know, and Liddell is, you know, certainly, the analogy I keep having in my mind is, you know, the guy who's the big free agent signing gets his big contract and has an off year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And now here's Chuck, where you see Chuck everywhere. Chuck has got to be financially comfortable at this point. Probably after 8 years, 9 years of slugging away. And I'm sure he, you know, as he says, loves to fight, and that's great. But I think it makes you wonder about, do you lose that hunger? Because realistically, this is Chuck's first fight with the press. You know, the Ortiz fight was a big fight, sort of. in the MMA world, you know.
Yeah.
But in the mainstream media, there'll be people watching this to see if, in fact, it's better than the Mayweather-De La Hoya card they ordered a week and a half, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I think there's a fair amount of pressure there. And so I'm just wondering. I mean, Jackson is, I'm sure, you know, Jackson is hungry for what Chuck's got. Chuck's already got it. I'm sure he's hungry to keep it.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if there isn't that imperceptible drop-off. And that's, the more I talk, like I said, the more I talk about it, the more I have a hard time picking Chuck right now.
Yeah, the by all accounts, out of Chuck's camp, he gets more up for these revenge fights than anything else, even with the, you know, with the title on the line. He wants to beat Jackson because he got beat by Jackson.
Right.
So it'll be very, you know, it should be a really, really good fight.
It should be a great fight.
Yeah.
Right, and it's a great fight to end a great card. I would be surprised if, you know, at the round table after we're talking about what a dog of a card this was.
I'd be shocked.
Stunned. Like I say, I mean, even the one or two mismatches, actually two, even the one mismatch we see, we're expecting to see a bang-bang knockout. And I would be surprised if that didn't happen. I think at the end of this, I think you'll see, I think you're going to see a big jump in UFC numbers, because I think you'll get a lot of first-timers by this event.
Definitely, yeah. There could be a couple that end up not living up to the hype. I mean, there always are. But at the same time, I mean, they've got enough solid-looking fights on here that most of them have got to pan out. And the main event, you know, I just can't see that being a bad fight at all. There's no way. No way that happens.
No, I can't either. Neither of these guys strike me in the cross-check Sanchez mode.
Yeah, no kidding.
Of main event fights. So
yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. I'll have my popcorn and soda pop ready to go.
Yeah, me too.
Sure.
So let's that's our rundown of the card. Let's look at a few things. I usually do this in my written preview, but I'll ask you to play along with me here.
Sure.
Give me a potential overall fight of the night besides Liddell Jackson.
Overall fight of the night. Boy, I think I would probably go with. Geez, that's a tough one. I would go with Parisian Berkman.
Yeah.
I'd go with Parisian.
I think
Berkman.
I would go.
Because they both have so much to gain, and because they're both top 10 fighters.
Yeah, I would go in that direction as well. Who do you think on this card has the biggest statement to make, the most to gain with a win?
Outside of Quentin Jackson?
Yeah, outside of Quentin Jackson.
There's a couple candidates. I'm going to go with Keith Jardine. With Keith Jardine because if he wins in dominating fashion with a highlight reel knockout, it solidifies his presence in the division.
Yep.
Conversely, you know, a lousy performance by him gives him a lot to lose. So he has a lot of risk here. But definitely Keith Jardine.
I think biggest statement, I would give it to either Terry Martin or Thiago Silva. Terry Martin, if he can really take out Salivary in high reel fashion, that's huge for him. Silva, if he can come in here and just steamroll through Irvin, I don't think he'll steamroll through him.
No.
But if he can, you know, that's a big statement coming in from a new guy.
Yep.
Let's see.
That sounds good.
Most to lose from with a loss besides Liddell.
Okay, I don't think Liddell would be the one with the most to lose anyway. Chuck's legacy is safe.
All right.
I mean, for the most part. I mean, even if he loses to Jackson, it doesn't all of a sudden cast him into the pit of despair. The most to lose, there's a few candidates there, aren't there? I think Chris Lieben has the most to lose. Like we said, lost two out of his last three. He's fighting a guy he should beat. He's been kind of on the fringe a little bit, as much as on the fringe he's going to get. Lieben needs to win some fights to get him on his way.
Yeah.
So I think Chris is the one to do.
Yeah, he's a good candidate. I've got either Sean Salmon or Keith Jardine. Jardine losing to a relative nobody. Salmon, if he loses to a bulked up middleweight on 3 weeks' notice, that can't look good for him. Meanwhile, I think Belcher really has the least to lose with a loss.
Oh, I agree. I think, Belcher is... I would have to agree with that. Belcher is, got to be in UFC's good graces right now, and
yeah,
really, I can't imagine he has anything to lose. You know, technically speaking, you know, I wonder if I'd have to throw Quentin Jackson into that argument a little bit. I mean, not in the sense that, he has nothing to lose.
Right.
But you know, with the jump in sales that this pay-per-view is going to generate, with the marketability of Jackson, even if he puts on a good performance and loses in a slugfest, I don't think he loses anything. He may not get back to the title hunt anytime soon, but I think he'll be a draw just by putting on a good fight against Liddell. If he makes Liddell work, I think Jackson has unlimited potential as far as, you know, I mean, in terms of fighting more.
Yeah, and you know, he's only 28. I mean, he's going to be around for a while.
Right. So I think I would agree that Belcher is the guy with the least to lose, but I put Jackson as a relatively close second.
Okay, I can see that.
If you want to go with like you know, type thing, Jeremy Stephens really has nothing to lose either. No one's heard of him.
Yeah, that's true.
No one knows who Jeremy Stephens is, and he's fighting the guy.
Same with Houston Alexander, really.
Yeah, I mean, both those guys. I mean, actually, if you're going to say who has nothing to lose, I would say you got Jeremy Stephens and Houston Alexander. They have nothing to lose. And you can't get any more least than nothing.
Yep.
They have nothing to lose. Nothing, nothing, nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly.
All right. How about the potential knockout of the night? Who would you give that to?
Oh, Keith Jardine, hands down.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this is Taylor. I mean, he's fighting a guy that's getting it on short notice.
Yep.
You know, he's by some accounts, a big guy that'll stand. He's not fighting a Jake O'Brien sort of fighter that's going to shoot out him every 30 seconds.
Yep.
I think Keith Jardine has the opportunity for the biggest knockout of the night, the most likely opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got either Jardine or Martin. But I think Jardine definitely has the biggest opportunity as well. What's that? What'd you say?
Okay. Sorry, I had to come back.
Oh, no problem. Let's see. We've got, how about potential submission of the night?
Tough one, too.
Have you had anybody?
I'd go with Salivary. I think Salivary, that's most likely to pull off a big submission, and he's against a guy that's going to try to hit him. So I think the opportunity will be there. I don't think you're going to see a whole lot of submissions, truthfully.
Yeah, I agree.
I think Salivary might be probably the only one I'd see out there that would be definitively going after a submission.
Yeah.
I guess I'd go with Salivary, just on that basis alone.
I believe I would give that one to Wilson Gouveia. Because I think he's gonna catch Marrero on something nasty, just a feeling.
Yep. Okay.
I think that about does it.
Okay.
So yeah, that's our preview of UFC 71. Jerry, you got any parting shots you want to give at the end?
No parting shots, really. Just for those of you that are listening that want to join our UFC, MMA Fight Club team, why don't you hit our forum and click the Join Our Team links. We'd love to have you. And we're looking forward to moving up in our division with a strong showing tonight. Shawnee, I'd like to thank you for having me on again, and hope everybody enjoys the fight Saturday night.
All right. Well, we certainly do enjoy having you on the show. Be sure to stay tuned for the roundtable afterwards with Jerry, myself, and MMA Torch editor Wade Keller, where we will discuss the happenings of the evening and the ramifications thereof. I believe, from us, that is just about it. Now, we'll also get an announcement at UFC 71. I should have mentioned this before, about the next opponent for whoever will be the light heavyweight champion coming out of Saturday night. Did you hear about that?
I heard something about that, and I suspect who it is.
Yeah. One would assume that, I guess we won't put any spoilers in right here in case nobody wants to know. But Dana White is expected to announce who the next opponent for the light heavyweight belt will be. And he said that it will be someone that is imported, is how he put it. It'll be an import, I believe, is what the terminology was. So that kind of narrows it down. But again, we won't say anything just yet.
Yeah, you have to kind of wonder how that makes the rest of the locker room feel.
You know,
like that.
You know, but at the same time, I think they've seen this guy, and they're, you know, I think they're okay with it.
Well, I don't think it's a bad choice. It's who I'm thinking of, but it just makes you wonder.
What's that?
I said, I don't think it's a bad choice if it's who I'm thinking of. It just makes you wonder.
Yeah, Yeah, it's true. Sorry, I wanted to do a coughing fit there when I hit the mute button. Luckily, I've got a mute button this week. I have pneumonia, for anyone that didn't know. That's why my voice is kind of sounding weird. Luckily, I do have a mute button on my headset here, so I've been hitting that throughout the call so I can cough. But, all right. And thanks again, Jerry, for coming on. And
my pleasure. This
is Sean Ennis for Jerry Catalane signing off. Be sure to join us tomorrow night for the pay-per-view. Thanks.